back in the 90s, when they started doing embryonic stem cell research, they were literally playing God.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney in studio with Fred here in the palatial studio facilities of Real Science Radio. Thank you for inviting me in live in person, Fred.
It's always great to have you in studio, Doug.
I love it. Love it.
Breaking the confines of California and getting out here every now and then. So
that's right.
So today, Doug, we're going to talk about Parkinson's stem cell treatments. If you're interested in that, it's actually a pretty interesting story. And then there's this collapse of an arch, lover's arch.
I heard about that on Valentine's Day. Now, that's ironic, isn't it? Is that the definition of irony or serendipity? What is that the definition of? That lover's arch would collapse on Valentine's Day. That's just really interesting.
It is. So
coincidental? Is that the definition?
Were we lucky again to see something that, you know, they'll tell us it maybe took hundreds of thousands or millions of years to form, and we got lucky, we got to see it collapse.
Yeah.
Or as they would say, unlucky, because they're real, you know, upset that this tourism.
They're very depressed there in southern Italy because they had very little else going for them down there. Well, we'll get to that story, though.
Yeah, and Doug, we're going to introduce a new segment for our listeners and YouTube audience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's called the Knucklehead Science Award of the Week. We provide each of our favorite knucklehead stories. We'll share those later in the show.
The Knucklehead Science Award of the Week.
It is, and it's the segment is sponsored by Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verses 2 and 3.
Ecclesiastes 10,
yes.
2 and 3.
Yeah.
Oh, Fred, you're sending me to the Bible already.
And I think we'll have to send the listeners and the audience to the Bible, too, to see why that verse wants
Ecclesiastes 10. We're not going to give you the verse anymore. Just read all of Ecclesiastes 10, and then if you can figure out what Fred's referencing, then you can write to us. And then you will, if you answer that question, you will exempt yourself from any type of knucklehead award for at least a year, right? But the thing is, there's so much knucklehead science out there, Fred, that we could award 2 awards a week, we think.
I think daily.
we've done a little bit of pre-market research, and we think there's enough material to award a knucklehead science award at least twice a week.
At least twice a week.
We think. So we'll see. If it turns out that the secular scientific world cannot produce a knucklehead award at least twice a week, that'll be good, Fred, for civilization. It'll be real progress. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see about that. Now, are we going to start that this week, Fred, or are we going to wait until the next? Are we just inaugurating it?
It's because it's so easy. You get 2 or 3 at least.
Okay.
We're going to start this week.
Okay,
so
all right.
Stay tuned till later in the show. You'll get to see who wins the Knucklehead Award of the Week.
And just so everyone knows, I had no idea Fred was going to announce this until right now on the show. And so we'll see if there's enough material in the secular scientific world to produce a Knucklehead Science Award, like live in real time right now. It's possible. We'll see. All right.
So the first story is Parkinson's patients receive dopamine-producing stem cells.
Wow.
So I found this particularly interesting because they use adult stem cells.
Mm.
You know, there's been the thing in the past about embryonic stem cells. It's definitely,
ethical
to use those.
Well, and whenever people hear the word stem cell, they, at least older people, we tend to think embryonic stem cells, but the vast majority of research going on now, it doesn't have anything to do with embryonic stem cells. It's all about adult stem cells.
Yeah. And they're the ones that actually show promise and effectiveness. So I worked for a company, Acridian BCT, and I was on a project where we developed a chamber that grows adult stem cells. because it's not an easy process, but you have to do things how you feed it, and you have to remove waste and things like that as these adult stem cells grow.
Mm.
And so that was a really fun project. Got to do the software for a part of that chamber.
Wow.
Well, and talking to scientists there, by the way, there was a staff of scientists. There's several that I asked about, you know, how does evolution play into your whole thinking? And it just doesn't.
Never thought about that.
Real world things that need to work. So anyways, So here's from that study. If the brain can once again produce normal levels of dopamine, Parkinson's disease may be slowed down and motor function restored. And this is from Brian Lee. He's got an MD and a PhD, and he's a neurosurgeon with Keck Medicine and principal investigator of the study. Mm. So, Doug, first of all, dopamine. Have you ever taken a cold plunge?
Cold plunge, I've not had the courage to do that. Like, are you talking about the full-on, like, jump into a lake of freezing water?
Yeah,
like, they cut a hole in the ice and jump in? I've never done that.
Well, I know a guy I used to work with. He bought, like, a cold plunge container, and he'd fill this thing with, I don't know, really cold water, and he'd be in there for, like, a minute. It's like, you're nuts, dude.
Really?
But apparently, it increases your dopamine by, like, over 250%. It lasts a lot longer than the coffee that we're drinking.
Ah, yeah.
They're using dopamine to try to improve Parkinson's symptoms. So, you know, Doug, I've done really kind of wimpy cold water plunges.
You have?
Every now and then I'll take like a very brief cold shower.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't even have the courage.
Yeah, but it's like super brief. And I, okay. Yeah. But anyways, there really is an effect to it. I remember when we were in Cancun. So we took a vacation. I got to go on vacation with my wife last month.
Nice.
And there was a couple of people we met in what was a hot tub because for whatever reason, it was like the coldest week that they had in Cancun in like several years.
Mm.
So we're in a resort, but it's a little chilly and the water was cold in the swimming pools. And so we actually got in the water eventually after being in this hot tub kind of swimming pool, and people are in the pool. I was telling them, hey, you know, now you're going to have more energy for the next 4 or 5 hours because of the whole dopamine effect. And they're like, oh, really? That's interesting. And so some people went in because of that, because they wanted to be more energetic the rest of the day. And again, it has more effect than coffee does. So,
okay. Well, we all want more dopamine.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's why they call dope. Is because drugs, many of the narcotic drugs that people get addicted to, artificially increase dopamine production in your body. So, or they mimic the effects of dopamine. Dopamine is like your body's natural high.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. And
by increasing dopamine levels, it can help with conditions like Parkinson's, right?
Yeah.
And they're using adult stem cells, which that matters both scientifically and ethically, right? Because with adult stem cells, you can get adult stem cells from me or you or Fred or anybody, and we don't have to kill anyone and chop up their body and use it without their consent, which is immoral, unethical, and wicked and evil.
Yeah.
Right? We can get adult stem cells. And it looks like, Fred, if I'm reading this article correctly, someone a lot smarter than me, are able to somehow induce pluripotency back into the adult stem cell?
Yeah.
That's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. And I've heard that word pluripotent stem cells. That's been around a while. I remember that from Caridian BCT. But they have something they call induced pluripotent stem cells.
Huh.
And so they say, and this is from the article, unlike embryonic stem cells, these iPSCs, or induced pluripotent stem cells, are made by taking adult cells, such as those from skin or blood, and reprogramming them back into a versatile state. And to deliver the cells, this Dr. Lee, he creates a small opening in the skull to reach the brain, and he uses magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, for guidance, and he carefully places the stem cells into the basal ganglia, the region responsible for coordinating movement. I wonder if that's that part of the brain that weighs less than a paperclip.
That might be the part. It's the basal ganglia that you were going for there.
So the one time I had a bogus interesting fact, I failed to, I put into AI, somehow AI told me that brain weight, but you know what? The brain might weigh as much as a paperclip. Maybe some of these leftist bureaucrats
Some of the people who are coming up with the tax strategies, let's say in the state of California, some of those type of governing officials,
their brain. Or the same ones that come up with some of these stories later on in this episode on the Knucklehead Science Award of the Week. So
some of the examples now. Some of the folks involved.
Maybe we don't have to do the error correction on that interesting fact. So anyway, so talking about MRI.
Yeah.
Who invented the MRI?
Oh,
we interviewed him, remember?
So the inventor of MRI was Dr. Raymond Damadian. He's been on Real Science Radio. Bob interviewed him a few years ago. And there was some dispute over who invented MRI until Dr. Damadian eventually won the lawsuit. And now, even if you Google it, Fred, Google says Raymond Damadian invented the MRI. So that's Real Science Radio. We're happy to have been involved in advancing the truth that Raymond Damadian invented MRI. And MRI is used in placing these induced pluripotent stem cells into a particular portion of the brain. Just the fact that anyone could do that is astonishing.
Oh, it's absolutely
just unbelievable. Wow.
Yeah. And if I recall, he was in the running for like the Nobel Prize for that, but because he's a creationist, he's not a secular evolutionist.
Yeah. Oh,
that played into the whole politics between all of this and then trying to deny that he,
Dr. Damadian and the MRI. Yes, yeah, yes. Well, so the doctor who's using Dr. Damadian's MRI to place induced pluripotent stem cells into a particular part of the brain, neither him nor Dr. Damadian are thinking anything about evolution during any of that to do this. They're doing this, and never have they ever had to refer to or even consider the idea that everything they're working with evolved accidentally for no meaning or no purpose. Yeah. They don't think about that. In fact, I would bet you that while you're using an MRI to place induced pluripotent stem cells into someone's brain, that you probably assume that everything you're doing has a purpose and is on purpose. Mm-hmm. Nothing is accidental. It's just astonishing and amazing. This is, what a story. Wow.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, getting back to adult stem cells, when you deal with the embryonic stem cells, you can't, first of all, they cause tumors.
They're dangerous.
They're very dangerous.
Yes.
You can't really match it to a patient. With adult stem cells, from what I recall at Cridian, a lot of times you take adult stem cells from yourself.
Yeah.
You know, because then there won't be any kind of rejection or whatever. So you can obviously match a patient with adult stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, there was a very strong clinical record for adult stem cells. And I know it's just gotten better because if you research, do a Google and you'll see a lot of the advancements, pretty much all the advancements we're getting in stem cells is adult stem cells.
Right.
So
the development of an embryo is an extraordinary singularity in life. It's not anything that we can reproduce. And it's so far, it's something that is beyond our ability. We shouldn't even play in that zone. So people think that doctors and scientists, they've been accused of playing God, right? Well, back in the 90s, when they started doing embryonic stem cell research, they were literally playing God because they were literally taking the bodies of other human beings without their consent and doing experiments on them. Anyway, they were punished for that, not mystically by God, but it turned out that they couldn't play God. It didn't work. They weren't smart enough. They didn't have the resources, mental, spiritual, physical. They didn't have the capacity to play in that space. And so, interestingly, God excluded men from working and playing in that space just by the natural way things are made. We can't play with those stem cells without hurting ourselves. And so thankfully, God is merciful and he's kept us out of that space, at least for now. But the adult stem cell space is amazing and producing incredible results for rejuvenation, longevity, healing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Doug, it's time for our interesting fact of the week.
All right, and the interesting fact this week, before we get to it, Fred, I want to thank Pete in Houston, Texas, as the sponsor for the interesting fact of the week, and I wish Pete had given me more information about himself and his company and his products so that I could have more to say before you actually get to the interesting fact of the week, but that all I have is, thank you, Pete in Houston, may I have another.
All right, here we go, Doug. So here is the interesting fact of the week. Which is the only human part, just any part, which is the only human part that does not receive blood?
Oh,
blood.
Okay, well, the only part of the human body that does not have access to the blood supply, if I'm not mistaken, is the epidermis.
The epidermis?
Yeah.
Okay, so it happens to be the cornea, the eye, the cornea in the eye.
Ah, well.
Yes. It is a transparent, dome-shaped structure that covers the front part of the eye and is essential for focusing light. It receives its oxygen and nutrients directly from the air and tears and does not contain any blood vessels.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Do you know what the cornea is made of?
Cornea?
Corneocytes.
I do.
Uh-huh. Okay. What? Yes?
It's made of cells, atoms.
Yes, yes, yes. It's made of... Corneocytes are the cell types. Do you know what your epidermis is made of? At least the very top cells?
Skin cells.
Corneocytes. They're the same cell.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And so I will file my official, what's it called? My official protest against AI, because the cornea is actually the same tissue type as the surface of the epidermis, neither of which has access to the blood supply.
But the question was the only human part that doesn't receive blood. So there you go.
Well, wait a minute. My epidermis is a part. It's a part of me.
Yeah, but it receives blood, right?
No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so. I know it does not.
Okay.
In fact, interestingly, the epidermis was considered non-living tissue for many, many years because it lacks a blood supply. Well, it turns out that even though the epidermis, and I'll bet the cornea is the same, Fred, because they're the same tissue type, even though they don't have access to the blood supply, they do meet all of the other qualifications for living, which, by the way, that's a whole different... I have actually a segment of a Bible study on what's alive and what's not. There are many things, Fred, that we think are alive, like let's say that ficus plant there behind you there, that beautiful... A ficus plant there you got, the ficus tree?
Yeah, that thing I have to water about once every 30 years.
Now, we think that they're alive, right?
Yeah.
But according to the Bible, they're not alive.
Okay, well, that's plants. That's actually artificial. I know it looks real, but...
Plants, bugs, they're not alive. Not according to the Bible. So anyway, that's a whole other topic. But whether or not
we'll have to research that, because when I do a quick Google search, and I know a lot of times Google's using AI now, it says the epidermis, the outermost layer of the skin, does contain blood vessels.
It does not.
Okay. No. Well, you should know, actually.
Well,
line of work.
You know, though, here's the thing about the epidermis. For many years, most of my career, I was taught, and I taught other people, that it was non-living tissue. But recent research indicates that it is living tissue. And so it's quite possible that it does access the blood supply, and we've only now discovered it. It's quite possible, Fred.
Okay.
I'm going to have to defer to doing some more research before before I officially launch any protest against.
Okay, there we go. Okay.
Sorry. And then we'll have to look into this whole cornea thing too, because right now we think the cornea doesn't get blood, but we might not know.
Okay.
It's possible.
You have a shot. You have a shot.
Have a shot at that one. All right. We'll come back to that. We'll revisit this topic the next time we water that ficus.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye out for this one.
All right. All right. Now, Fred, so I want to get back to the induced pluripotency of the stem cells. So the reason embryonic stem cells have proven so dangerous and disastrous in research is precisely their pluripotency, which means they're exceedingly potent to do so many things that they're really difficult to control.
Yeah.
So with,
hence why they're associated with tumors often.
Right. Yeah. Right. They uncontrolled cellular reproduction is cancer.
Yeah.
Right. And so by inducing pluripotency, we're able to, people a lot smarter than me, obviously, they're able to induce a level of potency that is manageable and usable. And is it helping with Parkinson's? It was my question, Fred. We've seen, I read the headline that they're putting these adult stem cells, which they get from the skin or the blood, they reprogram them, make them, give them some level of pluripotency, inject them into a particular portion of the brain. Have we seen any documented improvement in conditions like Parkinson's? Which, by the way, I just hope I live long enough to get something like that.
Yeah.
Parkinson's and what's the other one? There's two diseases that we used to just call old and crazy, but we don't
there's
anymore.
Dementia and there's Alzheimer's,
Parkinson's. We used to just say that, you know, grandma's gotten old and she lost her mind. Now we've defined actually what's happening because so many people are living so long now, Fred, that we've had time now to analyze these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just grandma's old and gone batty, which is what we used to say 100 years ago. Now we actually can see what's happening because there are hundreds of thousands and even millions of people who are now living long enough to suffer through things like Parkinson's and dementia and Alzheimer's. We're able to actually analyze the breakdown of the human brain, the physiological breakdown that's occurring in our bodies. There's enough of us living long enough now that we can actually see what's happening and start to treat it. And this is one of the treatments for Parkinson's.
Well, looking at the article, it sounds like it's right now it's just in the trial phase.
Ah.
And so they're still closely observing patients who volunteered for this. Now, would you volunteer for this?
I
don't have Parkinson's.
I would hope I was too crazy. I'd be too crazy to be able to. Someone would have to volunteer me for it. In fact, Fred, we should do this. Since I'm of sound mind right now, at least I'm going to allege that. if I end up to where I'm in Parkinson's and I can't decide, please volunteer me for this. Yeah, I'm all for it.
All right.
I'm willing to take one for the team. Sacrifice my brain cells for science.
Okay. So, Doug, a couple weeks ago, Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
I hope you got your wife something. So
I did.
Oh, good.
I bought her a house.
Oh, that's
bought my wife a house for Valentine's Day. She was
isn't that
thrilled.
Good that you can, you know, we can pick things that we've gotten throughout the year and say, hey, this is your Valentine's gift.
That's exactly it. That's exactly what I did because I had kind of forgotten about that particular day because it's not really a big thing with us with Valentine's Day. But I took my wife out on the patio and I said, look, dear, happy Valentine's. I love you. And the I love you part I meant. The Valentine's was kind of a joke.
Yeah. Well, I ended up, we were both, as you know, we both had the flu that week.
Oh, that's right.
So we missed Valentine's Day. Thank goodness.
You guys were sick as a dog. Yeah, I remember.
And I ended up, well, I kind of felt bad. So I went online to Amazon and I bought a little, I thought a pretty neat looking little ring holder. You know, put your rings, your wedding ring.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so it shows up like a day later and she opens it and she's like, oh, I already have three of these.
Oh, that's,
you know, I'm just not the most observant guy, I have to admit. She appreciated the thought, but you know. So speaking of Valentine's Day, we mentioned this rock in Italy, Lover's Arch.
Lover's Arch.
The famous Italian rock arch, or should I say used to be a rock arch.
It used to be, yeah, down there on the southern coast. If you're familiar with Italy and the boot shape, this is the heel of the boot, right? That southern Italy, there was an arch right there where the Adriatic Sea crashes up against the Italian shore for millennia. There's an arch that's been carved there by the ocean in the rock. It's called Lover's Arch. It was called Lover's Arch. And oddly enough, it collapsed on Valentine's Day, which that's got to make everybody just stop and just wonder about, like, it could everything that's happening actually be an accident when things like that happen?
Yeah.
It just makes you stop and think. On Valentine's Day? Yeah. Wait a second.
And, you know, we've talked about these collapsing rock structures around the globe. They happen. They seem to happen. There's one like every month. And these are supposed to be geologic formations that many times are claimed to take hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years.
Yeah. Well, there was a Fox News article, Fred, that said the arch collapsed because it was millions of years old and gravity finally won.
Yeah, and that was actually some goofball writing a comment to the Fox News article.
Oh, that was in the comments section.
It was in the comments section. But it shows you, though, Doug, just the impact that the public school system has had on people.
Right.
Most people would just think that because that's how they were brainwashed into thinking about these geological.
Absolutely. So the fact that in the comments section, this comment would be prevalent would be that people assume it's millions of years old.
And if you read the replies, nobody replies saying, well, that's ridiculous.
No, because, of course not.
Yeah.
If you want to take the temperature of civilization, just go through the first 10 or 15 comments of every news story where there's a comment section.
Yeah.
And it'll kind of tell you where we are. It's a little bit depressing.
Yeah.
It's a little bit.
It is.
Off-putting, I must say. But
well, this was a candidate for our Knucklehead Science Award of the Week.
Okay. The guy who assumed that the arch was millions of years old. Yeah. And that gravity finally won. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the public schools have definitely done their job of brainwashing.
But instead, this thing very likely, you know, when after the flood, Noah's flood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with all that sediment being laid down from the fountains of the great deep, somewhere in that whole mix of things is probably where this thing formed.
Yeah.
My guess.
Well, sure. Or at least the infrastructure for the arch formed. And then, of course, the Adriatic pounding against the shore for about 5,000 years. I mean, you can get a lot done in about 5,000 years. That's a long time of erosion and things like that. But it's not such an amazingly astonishing, unbelievably long time that people could expect that maybe something like that could actually collapse in our lifetime, where we would actually see it. 5,000 years, yeah, there's a good chance a lot of people alive are going to actually see it not only develop, and they're going to be able to go kiss under it and become a part of the local legend that they're destined for lifelong love and all that. And God bless them. I hope everyone who kissed under that arch had lifelong love. I hope so. But because it's only a few thousand years old, there's a good chance that either the people who kissed under it or their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren might see it collapse because the ocean is still doing its thing. And 5,000, yeah, it's about right. Yeah. If it was part of a 4-billion-year-old infrastructure and accidental, evolved accident of dirt and mud and wherever that came from.
Yeah.
We'd have to go back and figure out, well, how do we get the dirt and the mud? But we're not allowed to go back that far.
And I'm sure if this didn't happen, they would have, if they went and dated it and, you know, they looked at the limestone, they would have said this thing was several hundred thousand or million years old. We couldn't find anything when we tried to find past stories on.
No, unfortunately.
Maybe they're getting smarter that they better stop putting ages to these things because they keep passing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Unfortunately, the Lover's Arch in Italy is just obscure enough that nobody's made any claims about it, except that if you kissed under it, that you were destined for lifelong love.
And you only hear about these things when they get wiped out.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, right? Okay, so Lover's Arch, if you miss your chance, but there is an opportunity for lifelong love, even without lover, even if you didn't have the opportunity to kiss under Lover's Arch in southern Italy, you can still achieve lifelong love. And if you're interested in figuring out how, send us a letter here at Real Science Radio, because Fred and I, we've each been married for at least 30 years, going on 40.
Yep, same. Yep.
So we're candidates for lifelong love. We're going for it.
That's right.
It's up to our wives. They're going to be the deciding factors, right? If we get that. But
all right.
We're on a roll.
Us older guys and dinosaurs.
Yes.
So our next story is going to be on evolution after dinosaurs. Evolution, you know, that happened rapidly. But Doug, before we do this next story, I wanted to mention you're getting a palette of books. I mean, so the ninth edition of the Hydroplate Theory, it's literally flying off the palette, and you're getting a big palette of books soon here in March. For those of you who've already pre-ordered Walt Brown's ninth edition, we really appreciate that. You can go to rsr.org or just go to store.rsr.org and you can pre-order the book there, and we are getting them soon. It'll be, again, I think.
Well, it looks like it's quite possible that we will have physical copies of the ninth edition of In the Beginning to ship by the end of March. Lord willing that some catastrophe doesn't happen. The wheels are in motion, and we should have copies in the warehouse by the end of March that we'll be able to ship.
Great.
That's what we're hoping for. Yeah. We've already made the commitment at the Real Science Radio global headquarters for our
secret location.
Well, we're going to fill the warehouse all the way to the ceiling with ninth edition. So,
yeah,
orders.
You'll get yours. It won't be like the Raiders of the Lost Ark. What's that thing? The Lost Ark.
The Ark.
Where, you know, at the end of the movie, they're pushing that thing into this huge warehouse. Well, that's similar to what our warehouse looks like.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're wondering where that is, we've got top men on it right now.
That's right.
Top men.
Mm-hmm. We've got qualified personnel searching right now for it.
That's right.
So we will be shipping the ninth edition, hopefully by the end of March. So if you haven't ordered yet, order at least two today, because you don't want to run out. Now, the eighth edition of In the Beginning literally sold out globally. You can't buy a new copy of the eighth edition. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
They've all been bought. And the ninth edition, it's going to sell out. It's just a matter of when, and you don't want to be involved in the lineup of people after it's sold out. So pre-order now. We have the pre-order price, by the way, is extraordinarily high. I just want to warn people, if you pre-order the book right now, you're paying a premium price. And the reason you're paying that premium price is because you're guaranteeing your place in line. It's quite possible that once the book comes out, it'll actually be available for less than what we're selling it for. Yeah. I just want to let people know.
Yeah.
The pre-sale price is to guarantee you get a copy.
Yeah.
Because there's no guarantee that you'll get a copy if you wait. So anyway,
okay,
there you go. It's only $150. I've already bought two of them for people that I want to send them to, because I love these people and I want them to have it. So if there's someone you love in your life, Valentine's Day has passed, Lover's Arch has collapsed. But if there's someone you love and you want to show them that you love them, send them a copy of In the Beginning, the ninth edition.
Yeah, again, a great book, and it's got great stuff on just creation in general and then on the Hydroplate Theory.
Yes.
So, awesome Doug, stuff. We got to get to our Knucklehead Science Award of the Week. But before, okay. I quickly wanted to mention this story. It doesn't quite qualify for that, and then we'll each give our favorite Knucklehead's Award of the Week.
Okay.
But this one is on evolution, quote-unquote, after the dinosaurs. So scientists claim marine ecosystems recovered within a few thousand years after this asteroid impact.
The asteroid impact.
The so-called asteroid impact.
Okay, yeah.
And so the findings were reported in January 21 in the magazine Geology. Sorry, that concern right there.
Wait a minute.
Advice of rethink.
Wait, Fred. Is the word geology in quotation marks?
Yes.
Isn't the word geology always supposed to be in quotation marks? I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. For all of our geologist friends
out there. Yeah.
We love you too. Okay.
And so it says it invites a rethink of how rapidly evolution can rebuild biological diversity, not just as it did after the Chicxulub asteroids. Did I say that right?
No. You didn't say it right, Fred. that word is designed for you not to say it right. So if
the chick lube,
let me help the audience. When you see this word, how do you pronounce this word? I mean, if you're a normal American person, I mean, God bless you if you're from the Yucatan or you're a Mayan or whatever, that's great. But when a normal, just average American sees this word, how do you pronounce that word? Well, we don't know how to pronounce that word. There's nobody knows how to pronounce that word. Why did they pick that word?
It's so that helps in it for those listening on the radio.
C-H-I-C-X-U-L-U-B. Chick-X-U-L-U-B. I have no idea. So anyway, I think that people who are trying to manipulate other people like to pick words that they know people won't be able to pronounce just so that they can force you to. The only way you can figure out how to pronounce this word, Fred, is to Google it, and now you've been sucked into their narrative. I don't appreciate the word. That's,
oh yeah, and you know the whole asteroid killing the dinosaurs.
And by the way, Fred, you and I graduated high school in the 1980s, and I'm going to assume you graduated high school somewhere around there, maybe a little earlier than me, but not
one year, 79.
Okay, so do you remember it being an established scientific fact that there was a meteor impact that killed the dinosaurs? Do you remember that in high school?
Actually, I don't.
I don't either.
Yeah.
You know why? Because it wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't. But if you ask anyone who graduated high school in the last 20 years, it's like religious dogma that there was a meteor impact. When we graduated high school, the story was the dinosaurs all died 65 million years ago. We don't exactly know why. But now they've added to the fairy tale this.
Yeah. And it's a changing story, Doug. You know, when I've done talks on dinosaurs, I have this segment. And so pretend you're hearing the Imperial March Darth Vader music. We can't play that right now. Now, whether or not YouTube censors that is, as you know, a licensing validation by us doing that. So how about you do that in the background, and I'll read our list of what killed the dinosaurs. These are from actual papers that over the years. Okay, so go ahead.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, asteroids, okay, super volcanoes, dun, dun, climate change, dun, dun, starvation, dun, dun, so they ran out of snacks, egg-eating mammals, the tiny creatures beat giant reptiles, the global dinosaur pandemic.
The pandemic? No! Say it ain't so!
And poison salads.
So what?
Bad salad.
Salad? Yeah.
Too many dinosaur farts. Can I say that on?
We can bleep that out if it's, well, wait a minute.
Methane, you know, from methane, you know, and there's, yes, real papers that's what killed it.
No.
Yes.
Fred, you're making this stuff.
I'm not making it up. So then, of course, air problems, too much oxygen, too little oxygen, wrong oxygen, and, you know, radiation from space, cosmic sunburn. I remember this on the Bill O'Reilly Factor, HIV and climate change. I heard both of those on different times on the O'Reilly
Factor. HIV? What?
They were gay dinosaurs.
Hey, that's one place where we know that, who was the guy you just mentioned? It's just terrible. Speaking of Parkinson's.
Bill O'Reilly.
Dementia. Oh, Bill O'Reilly. We know Bill O'Reilly. He drew the line at gay dinosaurs.
So anyways, there's more. There's more, Doug. Well, they settled in on this more scientific Chicxulub with the X in it.
Uh-huh.
Asteroid impact. Well, just really quickly on that story that they wrote on this, they use basically space dust to try to date when this ecological system recovered with a particular plankton. And here it says, curiously, the cosmic dust indicated that this bacteria evolved, or plankton, within just 6,000 years.
The plankton recovered from the asteroid impact within a mere 6,000 years.
Yeah. But the scientists hesitated to trust the result.
Of course, because anything that's under 10,000 years, they're not allowed to talk about.
That's right. And there's another scientist in here, a different study where they found that it was within decades of this impact. And so all of this, first of all, we know it's not true that, you know, asteroid wiped out all the life on Earth and this iridium layer and all this other nonsense that we could do a whole nother show on.
Yeah, yeah.
But really what happens is whenever there is a disaster like a global flood, we know that ecosystems can recover quickly because of the genetic variety that God put in life And just
that's
with,
right.
Yeah.
And with that genetic diversity was built in so that when there were catastrophic events,
yeah.
life could recover. And it does.
Yeah. And within within 5,000 years.
Oh.
6,000 years.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Okay.
Actually, it would be within about 4,500 years if you want to, not to put too fine a point on it, but I like to put too fine exactly. a point on it. So it's all within about 4,500 years since Noah's flood.
Yes.
Or at least since the end of that flood. Because that flood lasted a year. That was a long deal.
It was, quite the ordeal. It's a little bit more than a year.
Yeah. And so...
Doug, we're actually getting near where we're running out of time, but we have to get to the Knucklehead Science Award of the Week. And I want to give you my first one. Okay. I'll give you mine, and then you give me your favorite one.
When reason takes a holiday and logic's feeling weak, here's your Knucklehead Science Award of the Week.
So mine is this story. Earth's core has massive hydrogen, and so researchers now claim Earth's core may contain more hydrogen than all the oceans combined. The Earth's core.
Okay.
And of course, they're basing this conclusion on seismic tomography. And so, again.
That's one of your favorite topics.
Yeah. And for them to actually claim this and act like it's true. It's a really low grade form of so-called science we've talked about before. There's no way they know this is true. In fact, the odds are very, very high that it's just simply false.
Mm.
So I'm giving this one my Knucklehead Science Award of the Week.
It's your Knucklehead Science Award of the Week.
And I don't think it deserves much more attention than that, but it was right there plastered. The first article I found when I did this yesterday, that was the first one. And so that one gets the award.
So anyone who went online over the past week, interested in science, searching science, there's a good chance they would have seen this.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Because the algorithm kind of...
The algorithm?
The algorithm. Exactly.
Inventor of the internet.
So the thing about the Earth's core is that nobody knows what's there. We don't know.
No.
I mean, we can assume that there must be an awful lot of metal there because of the magnetic field of the Earth. So that's a reasonable assumption, is that the center of the Earth, or at least down deep, there's probably a lot of iron, metal.
Well,
iron.
With your great theological expertise, isn't hell there? Isn't there? What's your... You
know? So, yeah, hell is depicted in the Bible as down.
Yeah.
And it's all talked about as being in the... Well, for example, when the Lord died, he said he was in the heart of the Earth. So hell is probably at the center of the Earth, and it's probably metallic and molten and hot. And the reason there's a picture of the fires of hell is, well, number one, because, you know, the whole lake of fire thing in Revelation, but the center of the Earth is probably some sort of molten metallic, we actually don't know. We don't know because we can't go down that deep. We've only gone down anything beyond about 18 inches in geology. They're mostly making it up.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's just like you, when you're digging in your yard and you hit the water pipe, it's about the same thing in geology. That's about how much they know. I'm going to nominate all of the scientists for my, what did we call it, Fred? There's too many words involved.
The Knucklehead Science Award of the Week.
Knucklehead Science Award of the Week goes to all the scientists who, over the last 25 years, have convinced everyone that there was a meteor impact that killed all the dinosaurs.
Here's your Knucklehead Science Award of the Week.
Okay.
Because I just remember when I was in high school, we didn't know that. And now they pretend that we've always known that. And I just want to remind everyone that we don't and we didn't.
Yeah.
And so they're a bunch of knuckleheads. That's it.
Well, I did want to mention one honorable mention. I've already picked mine. But another story, the universe may end in a big crunch.
A big crunch.
And so here again is this flaky science and, you know, where they come up with this stuff. They claim that new dark energy measurements, how do you measure something that doesn't exist, allegedly suggests the universe might collapse in a big crunch. Now, I do believe in the Big Bang, Doug. You know that, right? It hasn't happened yet.
Oh,
I mean, based on your biblical knowledge of what happens to the Earth and the universe.
Right? That's right. Well, the elements will melt with a fervent heat.
Yes.
So, yeah, okay. Well, they're hitting all around the bullseye. Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a big crunch. That's more like the Big Bang, a big explosion with a lot
of heat. Big Bang coming. Yeah, exactly.
So that one kind of gets honorable mention.
I got you.
All right.
So the big crunch happens when the all the dark matter that we've not observed collapses in on us or something like that, or
To me, these stories, I don't know, you get to point why we have this segment is they don't really deserve a lot of airtime. Right. I mean, you can go, just so you know, they're goofy nonsense knucklehead claims.
Yeah,
so face palm.
Uh-huh.
You know, did someone really just say that?
The multiverse might collapse on you. Okay. Just don't worry about
that's
that.
A lot of universes collapsing on
you. That's right. There's other things you can worry about other than all the dark matter and all the multiverses collapsing on you. We can help you be concerned about more legitimate concerns.
Yep.
That's our mission here at Real Science Radio.
That's right. And again, if you want to sponsor a show and be mentioned on the Interesting Fact of the Week, go to store.rsr.org. Doug, you're not taking a salary, I'm pretty sure. And you've asked for a raise from $0 to $0.
Well, you guys keep doubling my salary every year, so I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just same here. But we do need your donations and sponsorships to stay on the air.
That's right.
On radio. Radio's not cheap.
No.
And we've got a fantastic crew of video producers. I know we continually get really positive.
Amazing. Geniuses. Creative geniuses.
Yeah, absolutely.
Guys. They're amazing.
If you want more of this and continue it, please support the show. And Doug, it was always great to have you in studio.
Yes, thank you for inviting me in, Fred.
So, oh, and by the way, we are going to be at a conference in Branson, Missouri.
Branson, Missouri? Branson?
Yes, Branson.
That's like the American version of Hollywood, right?
It's a homeschool conference, and we will be there May 18th to the 20th.
In Branson, Missouri, at the All-American Homeschool Conference. It has a name, by the way, that escapes me at the moment. So you could volunteer me for Alzheimer's or Parkinson's research right now as I try to remember the name of the homeschool conference for which I've purchased an airline ticket and done significant research, and I'm very aware of it, yet I cannot remember the name.
So it is called Teach Them Diligently.
Teach Them Diligently.
Yes. And there are a lot of great speakers. Mike Snavely will be one of the speakers,
yeah.
And we'll have a booth there. And we just did a show with Mike. And, you know, there'll be Answers in Genesis and other big organizations there. Ken Ham's going to be speaking. Captain Barry Butch Wilmore will be there, an astronaut.
Yeah, an astronaut.
Yeah. So,
we'll have to interrogate him and find out if all this. So, you know.
Yeah. And so this May
14th. Bottom of the whole moon landing thing with that guy.
That's right. So May 14th to May 16th, you should try to make it to this thing because Branson's kind of a cool place to visit. They have a lot of shows that are gospel based.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got Sight and Sound Theater.
I've wanted to go to Branson ever since it became a thing.
Well, when you go there, I've already seen the episode of David at the Sight and Sound Theater.
Oh, really?
So if you come hopefully one of your daughters will be able to make it, you guys should go to that and I'll run the booth because it's only like a 15-minute drive from this convention center.
Oh.
And it's fantastic. So if you can join us out in Branson, that's great. We'll also be at the Colorado Homeschool Convention in June.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Join us out there in June at the Colorado Home Educators Conference. At least that's what it used to be called. I think they changed it now just to keep me on my toes. They've changed. It used to be the Czech Colorado Home Educators.
As far as I know, it still is, but I'm not positive.
No, they changed it, Fred.
Really?
Just to confuse.
You would know better than I would.
They changed it just to confuse us.
Okay.
So, we'll be promoting that as we get closer. Yeah. So thanks for having me and Fred. Yeah. God bless. It's been fantastic. Yep.
Thank you, Doug. So for my co-host, Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you. Intelligent.